Hello and welcome to Craftcast, the Freemasons podcast, one of the later episodes of our season two. And I have with me, as always,
James Dalton
and
Sean Butler.
Hello, guys. Nice to see you both, as always. How have you been?
Very well. I've been enjoying the rather warm weather, actually, that we've had over the last few weeks. It's been positively delightful.
You call it warm, I call it normal. But okay.
Well, yeah, okay. quite busy, though, at the moment, because in a few days' time in my province, we have a lodge that's celebrating their centenary, which is quite a lot of admin and ceremonial for. And
well, when you're deputy district and...
District, excuse me.
Sorry, deputy, we are not a district. Provincial Grand Director of Ceremonies.
Well, normally the Provincial Grand Director of Ceremonies would do all of that.
Sure.
But actually on this occasion, he's asked me to do it.
Okay. Delegated.
So he's delegated well, very well. And it's the first time I've ever arranged or organised a centenary, so there's been a little bit of stress, but I'm hopeful that it's all going to go exactly to plan and be perfect, because I was always told...
Because otherwise you're sacked.
Well, my provincial Grand Master is a former Deputy Grand Director of Ceremonies, and he's always said to me jokingly, but I think quite serious, if it goes really well, it's the ruler that did a great job. But if it goes badly, it's your fault.
It's your fault.
And yeah. Sean?
Yes, busy as ever, but very well, thank you. I was lucky enough to be invited up by Nigel Argyle, who's the Provincial Communications Officer for Cheshire, to their Communications Lodge, which is dedicated to people who work within communications or have an interest in communications or who are involved within communications in the province of Cheshire. So it's it was their banner dedication ceremony. It was a fantastic evening. And yeah, shout out to the brethren of the Communications Lodge. It's lovely to be with you.
What about you, worshipful brother Watley? What have you been up to of late?
Very recently had the Keele University Fencing Charity Showdown.
Insert pun here about erecting fences.
So
just
we
call it a showdown.
Yeah, that's what the event was called.
The wild west.
That's what it was called. So it's a fun charity event that actually was set up by myself and my vice club captain. Back when I was club captain of my Keele University fencing club. Mm-hmm. And we set it up to raise a lot of money. It was our big event of the year. And every fencer gets involved. It's quite fun, really. Everyone gets involved with fundraising. And for every pound that's donated to them, 50% goes to them and 50% to the prize pot. But of that pound, you get to use it like a handicap in golf. We have a lot of fun with it. So, for example, I can attach weights to my opponent so that they can't move around so well. Or maybe they have to wear a blindfold.
So you can sabotage your opponent's
Basically, chances. Absolutely. Yeah. Or you can decide which weapon that we fight with, because there's three weapons in fencing. So you can decide
what?
Which...
What?
Yeah,
there's three sword, weapons. Isn't it?
It's three different types. I won't get into it. It's not a fencing podcast. But anyway.
Sponsored by Wix's.
Anyway, and so we did that. And last year I won the event. And this year I won again.
Is this because you've come up with the rules?
No, I most of the work was done. Shout out to a good friend of mine, David Lammy.
David Lammy?
Lamb.
Oh, right, okay. Went to Keele.
No, he came up with pretty much all the rules and came up with the format of it. And I just so happened to
But
to
did
win
you have
year.
To sign off on those rules?
Maybe or maybe not.
There needs to be some sort of investigation here. So you have to agree to the rules
this way.
And you keep winning.
In fairness, the rules were not helpful to me. In fact, in the final, which was live streamed, I didn't realise that one of the rules meant that I had to do the weapon that I liked the least last and for the longest. So that was my fault for not knowing the rules. But anyway, point being, over the past 2 years, we've raised just under £4,000 for it. And I took home about 1,400 of that. For charities, Masonic charities, for TLC Gibraltar and for the Staffordshire Festival, 2024 Festival.
Excellent.
That was a good bit of fun. Lots of training and a nice day of competition.
So, Sean.
Hello.
We've got a rather special guest on today's episode of Craftcast, don't we?
We do indeed. Very worshipful brother Adrian Marsh, otherwise known to me as Boss. Mm. Otherwise known to you, perhaps, as the Grand Secretary and Grand Scribe Ezra of the United Grand Lodge of England and Supreme Grand Chapter. Very, very interesting role that he has. And we thought it would be interesting and insightful for us to invite him along and ask him a few questions about the role that he does for all of us. Should we get going, chaps?
Absolutely. So, welcome, Adrian.
Thank you.
Very well, your brother, Marsh. Thank you for joining us. I'm looking forward to this episode, particularly because I think we don't often get to hear from, well, I don't think we've ever heard from a Grand Secretary, so it's nice to have the first Grand Secretary here on with us today.
Very good. Thank you for inviting me.
Our first question for you is really about your Masonic journey, your personal Masonic journey. Mm. So, start where it begins, really. When did you join Freemasonry? What inspired you to join?
So I joined in 1989. My future father-in-law was a very committed Mason. He was the secretary of Strongman Lodge number 45 and scribe of Strongman Chapter number 45. He'd got into Masonry relatively late in life. He was a lifelong army clerk, effectively. He ended up as a warrant officer in the army, eventually retired, and then took up a job at the General Medical Council, also as a clerk. So he was a naturally good lodge secretary. He discovered and he loved and became obsessed with Freemasonry, and he was his son didn't share his interest. And when I was going out and first courting my now wife, would go around for Sunday lunch, and he would obsess about Freemasonry. And he would love everything about it, and the energy that he had, and the enthusiasm, and then also the disappointment that his son didn't want to join. So I thought, you know what, this is a good way of getting in with the future father-in-law. So I approached him and asked my usual questions about, you know, how I could join and what I needed to do. So he was delighted. He brought me into the lodge, and it was a great. I really enjoyed it. At the time, I was probably the youngest member by a few years, but it was a thriving lodge. Don't get me wrong; it just had a more mature set to it. So I was very, very early 20s, and I guess the average age was mid 40s at the time. But I enjoyed it. Went through the chair, got involved. We did lots of different things. We had a very good charity appeal. We used to dine very well next door, as it was, the Prince of Wales. And I know people will raise eyebrows if they think you dined at the Prince of Wales. But it was traditional pub grub, and the older members liked it. And that was really how I got into it. I guess I then also joined a number of other things at the time. I joined a couple of Mark Lodges, joined Royal Arch, and joined another craft lodge as well. And yeah, in hindsight, maybe made a little bit of a mistake in trying to do too much too soon. Then had a young family, came along, a very busy job, and I just couldn't do everything. And I was getting myself quite frustrated that, you know, you felt always you're letting people down if you didn't turn up to something. So I think I'd overextended myself, and I fell a little bit out of love, I have to say, because I just ended up having to devote more time to the family, more time to work. Increasingly difficult to attend meetings, and increasingly frustrating sort of knowing that you were not participating. So I resigned from pretty much everything other than my mother lodge and my mother chapter, kept with them, kept very engaged, but didn't attend that often, visited other lodges, but wasn't particularly active after I went through the chair until probably about 10 years ago now, maybe 11. I was at a function, and somebody who knew I was a Mason, knew I was finance director at DS Smith at the time, or had just been made finance director, and he was involved in the Board of General Purposes at UGLE, and said, I don't suppose you're remotely interested in helping us out on something. So I said, it depends what it is, obviously. And it was around the time Geoffrey Deering had become president, and was looking to professionalise some of the board committees, particularly the Audit and Risk Committee, or Audit Committee as it was then, and the Risk Committee was slightly different, and I was asked if I could help out. It would only take two or three days a year. Would I be interested? And the answer is yes, of course. You know, I'd love to put something back in. So I got involved with the Audit Committee, then I was asked to join the main Board of General Purposes, which I did, and that, in a way, because it came at another phase of my life. Once, you know, children had flown the nest, I was towards the later stages of my professional career, it sort of reignited my enthusiasm again. So I got a lot more involved and, yeah, went back to type and then started joining lots of other units again, which sort of my wife always rolls her eyes at whenever we have that conversation. But, you know, I've really got myself engaged into it again. And as I was retiring from my executive career, I was asked if I'd consider looking at the Grand Secretary role. And the rest, as they say, is history.
So, Adrian, you just referenced there your appointment to offering of the appointment to Grand Secretary. That also comes with being the Grand Scribe Ezra, the Supreme Grand Chapter as well. It's a combined role. Could you just give us sort of a oversight of what your key responsibilities are in both of those roles? Essentially for the listener, what do you do? What is your job?
Yes, lots of people ask me that. And they've asked me that probably for the last 40 years. It's interesting. So actually, I wouldn't separate the two too much, because they're quite quite joined together, as much as we are going for that consistent single approach now. So the Royal Arch and craft, in terms of the differences, is not that great for me. So the responsibilities of the Grand Secretary are set out very clearly in the Book of Constitutions, that they administer the Grand Lodge and Screenland Chapter and anything else that a Grand Secretary or Grand Scribe should do. So yeah, it can be anything effectively. So we have the Masonic aspects of the role, which are to make sure that the Board of General Purposes is provided with the information that it needs to take its decisions, the same with the Committee of General Purposes for Royal Arch, and then that the operation of Grand Lodge and Supreme Grand Chapter operating according to the Book of Constitutions. So that's, you know, say that fast enough, that's quite a simple thing to do. So it's ensuring that we've got good processes in place and the information's provided to the right people at the right time, and that we can all enjoy our masonry. But it clearly, the job extends further than that. So we also have the running of the building here at Freemasons Hall, which, you know, is our unique asset. I mean, it's a beautiful, stunning building. And if anyone's listening who's never been here, please, please, please come and have a look. You're always welcome. It is the heart of Freemasonry in general, at UGL in particular. It is such a fantastic building, and yeah, it's a joy to have the responsibility for that. We also have the functions of UGLE to look after, so the different areas, so from, you know, sat next to Sean for communications is one aspect. We've got the secretariat team, we've got the IT team, we've got various other functions like legal, finance, HR, we've got the whole building, so the building services team, because this building doesn't look after itself, especially now it's 100 years old. And we've got a commercial team where we're looking to generate income from the building that we can then use to, you know, manage to keep membership dues as low as we possibly can. So they're the aspects of organising the Masonic side. There's the aspects of organising, you know, the UGLE and the membership organisation side. And then there's the building side. You know, I report into the Board of General Purposes and also the rulers. So I sort of crossed to two different groups. So from a rulers group, from the board group, you know, I somehow fit in to that trio or construct, so that we managed to carry on as we have for the last 300 years.
Adrian, we've spoke to the program master at the start of season one, and we spoke extensively about the new strategy. I wonder if you could explain, really, obviously you had a very important role in that. Can you talk us through that from your perspective a little bit, and how you sort of see it, how it's going and how you see it developing in the future?
Yeah, so long as this isn't a test if I remember the strategy now, Sean. I mean, it's having worked in commerce and industry all my life, you know, I love a very clear strategy. I think that's what we've got. It revolves around the three pillars: the thriving organisation, got coherent organisation, thriving membership, and community.
The program master's sitting around the corner with a pen and paper, ticking you off as you said each one of those.
Yeah, it's like reciting some ritual. My gosh, can I remember what I'm saying? So it's very clear. We need to, as a membership organisation, our numbers have declined. over a long period of time now, and we need to decide, and we did decide that, you know, if we're to carry on for another 300 years, what do we need to do differently and how do we turn things around? So, you know, the thriving membership, you know, we're a membership organisation. We need to enjoy what we're doing. Anyone coming into Freemasons Hall needs to feel special. They need to feel as though they're part of something that's really good, that they want to be part of. They need to be able to have a response and feel special as a member. When you go to lodges, they need to be encouraging and growing effectively. So the thriving membership aspect and what we need to do in terms of our numbers, it's again pretty simple. We need to stop the decline, which we're seeing some very good signs. And in terms of the numbers of initiates coming through and the candidates, it's very good actually at the moment. We're still not retaining enough. So once people have been initiated, passed and raised, stayed in Freemasonry a little bit of time, they're leaving. So why is that and how can we stop that? You know, what do we need to do to be more innovative at central UGLE level, but more importantly, all the way down to the lodge level? And you know, I get very inspired now when I go around to and visit different lodges and seeing what they're doing to sort of not to reinvent themselves, but just to make themselves more relevant, more engaging, people to enjoy the meetings. You know, for example, when I first started, yeah, most meetings started at 4 o'clock. Certainly my time, and it was pretty difficult then as a young guy to get out of work. You'd have to leave probably at 2:30. Everyone would not to know where you were going, why you were going at 2:30. It was pre-days of flexible working, so it was just tough getting to meetings at that sort of time. And it still is. You know, if I speak to any of you guys in this room, I guess, you know, it's a lot easier for you to hit a meeting at 6 o'clock than it is at 4 o'clock. In my day, if you suggested a later meeting, there would have been uproar in the lodge. But now you're seeing that happening. We're seeing people working a meeting length that's appropriate. People are understanding that actually we don't want to sit and listen to lots of people give lengthy reports. Reports can be circulated in advance. And just the key points raised so that everyone understands what's happening. And then, you know, dining afterwards is always a good part, and it doesn't have to be in a totally rigid way. So, you know, we've seen ourselves here in this room, the excellent beer and pizza evening at Lodge 10,000 last June, absolutely. Shortly to be repeated, I believe, this June.
Mm-hmm. And well, in fact, we raised your son.
Exactly. Yeah. Thomas is raising, exactly, and celebrated with beer and pizza. But it's doing those sorts of little things differently. Having, I went to a meeting in, what was it the other day, in Wolsey Hall in Watford for Old Falera. It was either Old Falerians or Watford, I don't remember which now. But it was a buffet style where everyone went up, served themselves, sat down. There were then seconds, and one or two members who'll know who they are. Had thirds.
But that would have been me.
It's like, Sean, you weren't there, but had you been there, I'm sure.
I think I was the only one in the whole lodge who didn't quite appreciate having to stand for the festive board because I'd just been walking your son around the lodge for an hour.
But other than the amount of forestry that we had in the courtyard at the time, which would come and sort of tickle down your neck, everyone loved the standing around. And it was great.
Yeah.
No, I'm joking. In all fairness, it was a lovely occasion. I think it's certainly Lodge 10A Nominee was in a way very much set up to be a beacon for new ideas and things, and that was certainly one that I think will be taken away to other lodges I'd suggest.
And just being able to walk around and talk to different people, which you can often do after dinner in the bar, but a lot of people shoot straight off then.
Yeah.
So you can be at a lodge meeting, you realise, oh no, I never actually spoke to X, Y, Z. So I really like trying that. I like the buffet idea. I think it was at Falerians actually, now I'm thinking about it. Been to others where we've had a curry, which is always a good thing from my perspective.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, people have bought in things. We had a master at Strongman brought in his own Madeira cake to celebrate his heritage, and we had that for. But yeah, wow. So little things, and maybe even not just having to have a 3-course meal.
Yeah, you know,
a lot of us are quite happy.
Certainly, fit in the university scheme, I think that's become very much a thing of trying to keep costs down for university students, that you have 2 courses rather than 3. Yeah.
Well, my mother lodge actually did a similar thing at our February meeting. For the first time ever, we said we're not going to have a 3-course sit down meal. What we're going to do is ask a few of the stewards to go out 10 minutes before the lodge meeting finishes, and they came back with about 15 bags of fish and chips. And we had that at the festival dining table. There's nothing in the rule book that says you have to sit down and have a full 3-course meal every single time you dine.
Not at all. And we like traditions. Of course we like traditions. That's one of the reasons we're members. But, you know, there can be new traditions as well introduced. You know, it doesn't have to be set in stone. And I think that whole... There's a Savage Club chapter. We always have sharing starters. And again, part of that sort of sharing and sort of breaking bread together, it just feels quite good. Mm. I don't know, quite know how I've rambled onto this. And we're talking about the thriving...
The strategy,
membership. So that's one set. And I think what we can do here is, you know, act to circulate good ideas, particularly through Sean and his team. Provide responses where people come and ask, you know, do we have to have a 3-course? Well, no, of course not. So we get that. So helping and driving that and that whole membership challenge is really important, providing the data to the provinces so they can see where they're going, what's happening.
I think Craftcast fits well into that in terms of really projecting that forward-thinking message. I think a few years ago that this would have been probably not even on the radar.
But a shameless self-promo.
There. Exactly. Well done, lads. You're ahead of your time.
Thinking for a compliment there.
No, but actually it's good. I mean, I like it. I mean, I put it on my phone when I'm on the tube or I'm driving and I listen to it. Or actually, to be honest with you, I probably have 3 stacked up that I listen through if I'm driving to Devon. I know lots of the young guys, particularly working in London, will have it and they listen to it on the way into work. I mean, podcasts have taken over as a means of comms, and yeah, really good. Then we've got the Coherent organisation. So that, again, is part of how we're organised, how we're operating, how we're making everything as easy as possible as we can do and enhance the members' experience by using that. So, yeah, within UGLE, we're an organisation that's existed for a very long time and things have happened in a set way for a very long time, and we've developed little silos. So one of the things that we're very keen on doing is putting in place a structure and a way of working and an organisation that will be, again, fit for the future and avoid some of the issues that we'd had. And also now we're into the third pillar as well, which is the review of what we do in the community. And there's quite a lot of work going on there and seeing, you know, what do we really want and aspire to be as an organisation, and how do we need to organise, if at all, differently, or encourage anything, if at all, differently, or do more of what we're doing really well at. So there's a lot of work around that at the moment. That's being led by Sir David Wootton, who may or may not present more going forward, or he will present more going forward, I know that for a fact, but it's in various different forums, just to explain, you know, what we're doing, how we're gathering the information, and now gathering feedback and input into that from the wider membership. So there's a lot of things going on, but all around the 3 pillars.
So, I mean, you mentioned there about a structure for the future, preparing ourselves for the next 300 years of Freemasonry. And recently, most Masons will know that there was a restructure in UGLE.
Yeah.
You know, how could you explain to us how these departments are organised, why they were restructured, and how that will impact our future Freemasonry?
Okay. I mean, when I came in and looked at how we're organised, what we had, our cost base as well, let's be honest about it. Are we getting value for money out of what we're doing? You know, again, you know, through my simple thinking, I wanted to take it into what are the fewest areas that we're really focused on. And I thought, well, there's probably 3. There's the members' experience. There's the staff functions, so things that we have to do, like employ people, pay bills, make sure we don't get into any legal issues. So we call those sort of, I refer to those as the staff functions, so the areas that service the operation. And then it's the members' experience, and then our unique asset, which is our building. So I thought we should probably try and organise ourselves around those three things and have as small a senior leadership team as we possibly can. So in the members' experience, which is really the drive on the Masonic side, we distilled that down into, you know, anything that's to do with the secretariat function, sitting under Oliver Coddington as a deputy grand secretary. So dealing with ceremonial aspects, dealing with the anything Masonic, in fact. I mean, he's got a number of different areas, including external relations, which looks at overseas grand lodges, how we relate to our provinces, how we manage everything from a Masonic perspective. Then we've got membership and communications, which sits under Sean on my right, although mm-hmm. you can't see that because you're listening. and that's to do with, it pretty much does what it says on the tin. It's how we're communicating both internally and externally. And internally, whether it's the messages from Grand Lodge or Supreme Grand Chapter to provinces or districts overseas, to, yeah, what's a really good practice in a lodge for communicating in order to attract new members. So it's how can we share good practice amongst ourselves, how can we communicate what needs to be communicated, and also how do we deal with external sources. And let's face it, at times there are still reporters who have a desire to create some sort of fake news or controversy about Freemasonry. And so we have to be able to respond to that effectively.
To paint an authentic image of what Freemasonry is. It's not not something imaginary. It's what we are, not what someone wants to create.
Totally. And then we've also got IT under Hugh Douglas Smith, which is dealing with the existing membership systems of Adelphi and Hermes, and also the transition into a new membership system of Project 2023, which will really start to put members more in control of their own data and their own information. One of the things Hugh and I both agreed on very early on was that it's slightly odd, that we're all in a members organisation, and if I change my phone number, I've got to write to my lodge secretary, who's got to remember to write to provincial grand secretary, who's then got to remember to do something on a system, rather than in anything else I do. I just, get on the app.
Do it yourself.
Your own profile you go into.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, and because the old the Adelphi system was based on, without boring everyone's senses, a version of Oracle that we're going to have to migrate away from. It's also very expensive. We thought, we should start with something actually that we're going to build around the members and migrate everything over to that. So it's a fairly long-term project over the next 3 or 4 years. And when it's finished, I think we'll have a cracking system and application. But it's starting with members owning and being able to take care of their own data. But we'll see where we get to on that. So IT, and we've also got the IT operations of the United Grand Lodge of England, keeping that safe and secure, making sure that everyone, can do their own work. But that all sits within, the members' experience. And then we've got what I define as, we'll call our unique asset. And that we split into two, which is looking after the building and building services, which sits under Gentleman called Richard Jewett. And that's making sure that, we've got a safe building, we've got a well-maintained building, and it's kept looking as special as it really should look. And then we've got a commercial team sitting under Claire Baston that deals with Masonic room bookings, but also external uses of the building. So I'm sure plenty of you have watched various programs and like myself, or in particular my wife, spotting aspects of our building.
Spooks.
Spooks. Slow horses now.
Slow horses, that was the Gary Oldman one.
Johnny English, in fact.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
First Johnny English, he walks through the... It's only short, but he walks through the halls.
My wife's got a particular eagle eye, and slightly bizarrely for the gents' lavatories.
Death of
Stalin.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So she's constantly spotting those. they are fantastic attributes.
So did you
building.
Just not tell her when they're coming out and you wait for her to notice?
No, most of it's highly confidential. I'm bound by secrecy to say what's coming out. Yeah. I've forgotten. And she says, oh, was that in your building? So might have been. Generating the commercial income. So this year, we've got a budget to generate nearly £1 million of income. from third parties, which then goes into keeping our, you know, managing the costs of maintaining this building. I think those of you who've read the annual report will notice that I mentioned in there that the cost of dealing with something that's called Regent Street disease, which is basically the rusting of the steel infrastructure that these buildings of the of this time, like Freemasons Hall, were built on, and are designed around Regent Street, hence it's called Regent Street disease. But after 100 years, you're starting to get issues, and we're having to deal with that, sort the corrosion out so that the building remains strong for another 100, 200 years. And we did the tower entrance last year, and that cost us nearly £1 million itself. So you can see we have some sort of large, lumpy costs, and so it's important that we have the commercial income to offset those. So that's a very long-winded way of describing what we did, how we changed the structure.
I think the commercial income is incredibly important. It's always nice to see it in movies or TV shows, but actually for the individual member, the reason that is important is because it prevents having to excessively put up their subscriptions.
Absolutely. Oh, 100%.
It's also nice to see somewhere that you've been to, or, you know, something that you're a part of on television. You know, that's a cool thing, I think.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, Masonic activity takes priority, so just to be very clear on that. But Masonic activity is not all the time in the building, so we have a great asset that's underutilised. For example, we're not open on any Sunday, and yet if you look outside in Covent Garden on a Sunday, it's absolutely rammed. So you know, we're looking at what it is we could do there. Are there any exhibitions that we could host? Oh, we've now just got a wedding licence, so... Those of you sat around here or listening who haven't tied the knot yet, bookings are open. I can't think of a better venue to get
Lena,
married.
Cough, cough. Stephen?
Yeah, thank you.
Hint, hint.
Someone at home listening will be happy with you mentioning that. I think, for example, one of the things that we do externally that's really nice is when we have musical sort of exhibitions of some kind. So, like, it's a fantastic organ that we have. One thing that I think from Grand Lodge meetings that you won't know unless you've been to one is when we sing the national anthem. I've never heard anything like it. It's like being in a stadium
it's amazing.
With everyone singing the same tune. It's just spectacular. I think the only thing that I could imagine equates to that is if you hear, you know, a musician playing in the hall. So I think that's a wonderful thing that we do.
It's a terrific venue. I mean, we've had some fantastic concerts, organ and otherwise. But yeah, certainly. I mean, I'm with you when you're in the quarterly communication, we do the long introduction to the national anthem.
Yeah.
And you're pumped by the time you have to start singing.
It's, yeah.
Although annual investiture, they did the second verse, and I have to admit, I'm not well versed on the second verse.
I'm judging you now.
Sorry,
second verse.
It's every year. You need.
Well, this is it now. This is
it. And it's not like you're not here for it.
Well, very true. Yeah.
So, Adrian, you've been a Freemason for 34 years. 1989, you joined.
Quick maths.
10 years before I was born.
Very good. All right, child. Thinking back across all of that time, what would you say, what are the aspects of Freemasonry that you enjoy or find the most rewarding of all?
Yeah, I find, what I've always found most rewarding is that in your working life, you tend to, unless you're very fortunate, you tend to spend a lot of time with a similar type of people in one shape or another, or most of your time. This gives you an opportunity, or certainly given me an opportunity, to meet people from such diverse backgrounds and differences. And you come together and everyone's the same, and you have a little hierarchy through, and you progress through merit. You learn things, you do things, and you operate together. And it doesn't matter who you are. And I found that particularly... therapeutic, that sounds a bit weird, but it's through my working life to be able to do something very different and cleanse my mind from the stresses of job, the activities at home and everything, and just be in a different space with different people that I probably don't see again until the next meeting a lot of times. I found that really enjoyable. Clearly, when you see and you read and you participate in some of the community aspects, there's a real feel-good factor about what we do, and you're proud to tell people what they hadn't realised. And it's always the same whenever it says, what do Freemasons do? And then you explain it and you talk about one at the moment, the London Air Ambulance Appeal. Without that, it wouldn't exist. Yeah. It's phenomenal. And being able to be part of that national organisation. I think it's fantastic. Always enjoyed visiting. I can remember when I was very young, with another friend of mine, we were on holiday with our wives in Antigua, and we thought it would be a good idea to go and visit a lodge there. So we went through the right process. We contacted our lodge secretary. We got clearance to visit, even though it was a UGLE district lodge in Antigua, and we just had a fantastic evening there. Probably too fantastic, as it happened. Maybe drunk too long and too hard from the cup of hospitality, but it was fascinating. And you know, I've done it in certain other countries as well, different parts of the country in the UK, England and Wales, and Scotland actually, going to meetings there. I mean, it's just a fantastic experience. I've always enjoyed it, and I like it that I have been able to be heavily involved at one period, taken a break and come back in again. And it's not as though anyone said, oh, you know, you can't come back in again, or you stopped getting involved 10 years ago. You had 10 years where you didn't get much involvement. We're not interested in you anymore. Everyone welcomes you back, and it's as though you've never been a part of it. So
yeah,
I've had a lot of satisfaction out of it. But most of all, it's been for me, you know, a little bit of escape from, you know, real life at times.
Well, I think what you're saying about escape, that's quite important from a young age. I was going to say our age, but I'd say my age.
Oh my goodness gracious!
No, I think I get that a lot. Well, you're quite busy, and like they say to me, oh, well, you're quite a busy young guy. You know, why did you put so much time and energy into this? Well, for me, it's like you say, an escape is still something productive that I feel I'm giving to the community, to my fellow brethren, and something that I really enjoy, rather than sitting and binging an episode of a series of something, you know, like it just gives you something productive without, you know, and sometimes a change is as good as a rest.
It's different, you know? Isn't it? It's, you know, and you've got the tradition, you've got the history, you've got little things you can do. Everyone's wants you, you know, encourages you to participate. It's not going to say, no, you can't do that. Or, you know, so we consume enthusiasm.
Yeah.
And it gets Stephen out of school for an afternoon. Adrian, thank you so much for coming in and talking to us on Craftcast. It's been fascinating to have this conversation with you and to understand a bit more about the behind the scenes of UGLE, and to meet the man whose signature is on most of the more recent Grand Lodge certificates. For those
all
listening,
of the most recent Grand Lodge certificates.
Otherwise, I've got a problem. Yes.
Otherwise, someone's been forging.
So, if you've recently been raised and been given your Grand Lodge certificate. It is Adrian's signature, which sits at the bottom
and
of that.
And if it isn't, Sean's getting the sack.
Yes.
Nice knowing you all.
Four given out tonight. Got back in the chair for one evening only tonight, because our master of my mother lodge is just had a new baby, so he's being consumed with that. And
fair enough.
So they've got my boring voice to hear tonight. But no, thank you. I really appreciate coming along. You know, I love what you're doing. I really enjoy listening to it, and I know I get a lot of positive feedback from other Masons once they found out and started tuning in.
Well,
can't say tuning in anymore, can you?
That's the hope. But yeah, thank you very much for being here. It's nice to speak to you. And for now, goodbye.
Thank you very much.
Well, I think that was a very interesting topic. Great to hear from him.
Yeah, I think Adrian's—he's one of these people, isn't he? That, you know, you see him in the annual report, you see his face, and he's sort of—he
writes to us once a quarter.
He writes to us once a quarter in FMT. He signs Grand Lodge certificates, and sometimes it can feel like he's a distant person.
Put a face to the name, or a voice, rather.
Absolutely.
I found it great listening to sort of some of the governance of UGLE as well, because it can be a bit mysterious. So to actually get a bit behind the scenes of how it works was good.
Absolutely.
Chaps, if just before we close, we received an email from someone who is familiar to us through his role within the province of Herefordshire, Worshipful Brother J. Stuart Jones, and he got in touch with a message that I can only describe as incredibly touching. And I thought it would be nice. I have checked with Brother Jones if he's happy for me to share it, and he was. So the email read, I just wanted to drop a line to say thanks. After listening to your podcast on men's health from November this year, I realised I was one of those men not being proactive about his health. So although I had no symptoms, I signed up for a PSA test with the Graham Fulford Trust in reference to the interview that we did with Frank Tiller about his personal journey and battle against prostate cancer and the work that he's done subsequently with CHAPS. Brother Jones writes, unfortunately, I had a raised PSA level. So with further tests, etc., it was confirmed as a positive diagnosis for prostate cancer. But also, as it had been caught early, it was a positive prognosis and the operation is scheduled to take place shortly. But it was the podcast that got him into action, and thanks, as now I can deal with it and get on with my life. The other positive that comes from this also being that I have now agreed with our provincial grandmaster and booked a PSA testing day in Herefordshire for November this year. I'm using my story to get more members and the public to be proactive and attend the testing day. I just wanted to give you the recognition that your impact through the Craftcast is appreciated and does help.
Wow.
It's incredible.
There
you
go.
I don't really have any words. It's nice to know that it's made an impact, but more importantly, it's nice that he's now sort of taking that forward to support other Freemasons.
Well, it's what we did it for, really. And makes it worth
absolutely
worth it.
And at time of recording, I understand that Brother Jones would now have had his operation. So we, on behalf of the whole team at Craftcast,
wish him all the best.
And indeed, the United Grand Lodge of England, just want to wish him all the best.
Yeah, absolutely.
And yeah,
and look forward to speaking to him soon.
And good health for his recovery.
Absolutely. Right, chaps. I think we're done.
I think we're done. Tweet us, Facebook, Instagram, podcasts@ujelly.org.uk. You know all the hashtags. You know all the @s. We'll see you next time.
Bye, everybody.
See you soon.
Craftcast, the Freemasons podcast. The podcast is hosted by Sean Butler, Stephen Watley, and James Dalton. The producer is Marta Zandri. And the podcast is edited by Trisonic.